55. The Rules of the Game. The considerable abilities of the Skybreakers for making such amounted to an almost divine skill, for which no specific surge or spren grants capacity, but however the Order came to such an aptitude, the fact of it was real and acknowledged even by their rivals. From Words of Radiance, Chapter 28, page 3.
"Great. You're the one guarding me today?"
Kaladin turned as Adolin came out of his room. The prince wore a sharp uniform, as always. Monogrammed buttons, boots that cost more than some houses, side sword. An odd choice for a shard-bearer, but Adolin probably wore it as an ornament. His hair was a mess of blonde, sprinkled with black.
"I don't trust her, princeling," Kaladin said.
"Foreign woman, secret betrothal, and the only person who could vouch for her is dead. She could be an assassin, and that means putting you under the watch for the best I have."
"Humble, aren't we?" Adolin said,
striding down the stone hallway, Kaladin falling into step beside him.
"No."
"That was a joke, bridge boy."
"My mistake. I was under the impression that jokes were supposed to be funny."
"Only to people with a sense of humor."
"Ah, of course," Kaladin said. "I traded in my sense of humor long ago."
"And what did you get for it?"
"Scars," Kaladin said softly.
Adolin's eyes flicked toward the brands on Kaladin's forehead, though most would be obscured by hair.
"This is great," Adolin said under his breath. "Just great. I'm so happy you're coming along."
At the end of the hallway, they stepped into daylight. Not much of it, though. The sky was still overcast from the rains of the last few days. They emerged into the war camp.
"We collecting any other guards?" Adolin asked. "Usually there's two of you."
"Just me today."
Kaladin was short-manned, with the king under his watch and with Teft taking the new recruits out patrolling again. He had two or three men on everyone else, but Adolin he figured he could watch on his own. A carriage waited, pulled by two mean-looking horses. All horses looked mean, with those two knowing eyes and sudden movements. Unfortunately, a prince couldn't arrive in a carriage pulled by chulls. A footman opened the door for Adolin, who settled into the confines. The footman closed the door, then climbed into a place at the back of the carriage. Kaladin prepared to swing up into the seat beside the carriage driver, then stopped.
"You,"
he said, pointing at the driver.
"Me,"
the king's wit replied from where he sat holding the reins. Blue eyes, black hair, black uniform. What was he doing driving the carriage? He wasn't a servant, was he? Kaladin clambered cautiously up into his seat, and Wit shook the reins, prodding the horses into motion.
"What are you doing here?" Kaladin asked him.
"Trying to find mischief,"
Wit replied cheerfully, as the horse's hooves rang against the stone.
"Have you been practicing with my flute?"
Don't tell me you left it in Sarius's camp when you moved out."
"Well, I said not to tell me," Wit replied. "You don't need to, since I already know. A shame. If you knew the history of that flute, it would make your brain flip upside down. And by that I mean I would shove you off the carriage for having spied on me."
Eloquent today, I see."
Kaladin had left the flute behind. When he had gathered the bridgemen left in Sarius's camp, the wounded from Bridge 4 and the members of the other bridge crews, he'd been focused on people, not things. He hadn't bothered with his little bundle of possessions, forgetting that the flute was among them.
"I'm a soldier, not a musician," Kaladin said. "Besides, music is for women."
"All people are musicians," Wit countered. "The question is whether or not they share their songs. As for music being feminine, it's interesting that the woman who wrote that treatise, the one you all practically worship in Alethkar, decided that all of the feminine tasks involve sitting around having fun, while all the masculine ones involve finding someone to stick a spear in you."
"Telling, eh?"
"I guess so." You know, I'm working very hard to come up with engaging, clever, meaningful points of interest to offer you. I can't help thinking you're not upholding your side of the conversation. It's a little like playing music for a deaf man. Which I might try doing, as it sounds fun, if only someone hadn't lost my flute. I'm sorry, Kaladin said. He'd rather be thinking about the new sword stances that Zyle had taught him, but Wit had shown him kindness before. The least Kaladin could do was chat with him.
So, did you keep your job? As King's Wit, I mean. When we met before, you implied you were in danger of losing your title.
I haven't checked yet, Wit said.
You haven't? Does the King know you're back?
Nope. I'm trying to think of a properly dramatic way to inform him. Perhaps 100 chasm fiends marching in unison, singing an ode to my magnificence?
That sounds hard.
Yeah, the storming things have real trouble tuning their tonic chords and maintaining just intonation.
I have no idea what you just said.
Yeah, the storming things have real trouble tuning their tonic chords and maintaining just intonation.
That didn't help, Wit.
Ah, so you're going deaf, are you? Let me know when the process is complete. I have something I want to try. If I can just remember.
Yes, yes, Kaladin said, sighing. You want to play the flute for one?
No, that's not it. Ah, yes, I've always wanted to sneak up and poke a deaf man in the back of the head. I think it will be hilarious.
Kaladin sighed. It would take an hour or so, even moving quickly, to reach Sabariel's war camp. A very long hour.
So you're just here, Kaladin said, to mock me?
Well, it's kind of what I do. But I'll go easy on you. I wouldn't want you to go flying off on me.
Kaladin jolted with a start.
You know, Wit said, nonchalant, flying off in an angry tirade. That kind of thing.
Kaladin narrowed his eyes at the tall, light-eyed man.
What do you know?
Almost everything. That almost part can be a real kick in the teeth sometimes.
What do you want, then?
What I can't have.
Wit turned to him, eyes solemn.
Same as everyone else, Kaladin Stormblessed.
Kaladin fidgeted.
Wit knew about him and about surge binding. Kaladin was sure of it. So should he expect some kind of demand?
What do you want, Kaladin said, trying to speak more precisely, from me.
Ah, so you're thinking. Good. From you, my friend, I want one thing. A story.
What kind of story?
That is for you to decide, Wit smiled at him. I hope it will be dynamic. If there is one thing I cannot stomach, it is boredom. Kindly avoid being dull, otherwise I might have to sneak up and poke you in the back of the head.
I'm not going deaf.
It's also hilarious on people who aren't deaf, obviously.
What, you think I'd torment someone just because they were deaf? That would be immoral.
No, I torment all people equally, thank you very much.
Great.
Kaladin settled back, waiting for more. Amazingly, Wit seemed content to let the conversation die.
Kaladin watched the sky, so dull. He hated days like these, which reminded him of the weeping.
Stormfather. Gray skies and miserable weather made him wonder why he'd even bothered to get out of bed.
Eventually, the carriage reached Sabariel's war camp, a place that looked even more like a city than the other war camps. Kaladin marveled at the fully constructed tenements, the markets, the...
Farmers?
He asked as they rolled past a group of men hiking toward the gates, carrying warming reeds and buckets of cram.
Sabariel has them setting up lavis fields on the southwestern hills, Wit explained.
The high storms out here are too powerful for farming.
Tell that to the Natan people. They used to farm this entire area. Requires a strain of plant that doesn't grow as large as you're accustomed to.
But why? Kaladin asked.
Why wouldn't farmers go someplace where it's easier? Like Alethkar proper.
You don't know a lot about human nature, do you, Stormblessed?
No, I don't. Wit shook his head.
So frank, so blunt. You and Dalinar are alike, certainly.
Someone needs to teach the pair of you how to have a good time now and then. I know full well how to have a good time.
Is that so?
Yes. It involves being anywhere you aren't.
Whit stared at him, then chuckled, shaking the reins so the horses danced a little.
So you do have some spark of wit in you.
It came from Kaladin's mother. She'd often said things like that, though never so insulting. Being around Wit must be corrupting me. Eventually, Wit pulled the carriage up to a nice manor home, the likes of which Kaladin would have expected in some fine late, not here in a war camp. With those pillars and beautiful glass windows, it was even finer than the city lord's manor back in Hearthstone. In the carriageway, Wit asked the footman to fetch Adolin's causal betrothed. Adolin climbed out to await her, straightening his jacket, polishing the buttons on one sleeve. He glanced up toward the driver's seat, then started.
"You!" Adolin exclaimed.
"Me!"
Wit replied.
He swung down from the top of the carriage and performed a flowery bow.
"Ever at your service, bright Lord Colin."
"What did you do with my usual carriage driver?"
"Nothing."
"Wit?"
"What? You're implying that I hurt the poor fellow?"
"Does that sound like me, Adolin?"
"Well,
no," Adolin said.
"Exactly. Besides, I'm certain he's gotten the ropes undone by now. Ah, and here's your lovely, almost but not quite bride."
Shallan Devar had emerged from the house. She bobbed down the steps, not gliding down them as most light-eyed ladies would have. She's certainly an enthusiastic one, Kaladin thought idly, holding the reins, which he'd picked up after Wit had dropped them. Something just felt off about this Shallan Devar. What was she hiding behind that eager attitude and ready smile? That buttoned sleeve on the safe hand of a light-eyed lady's dress that could hide any number of deadly implements. A simple poisoned needle stuck through the fabric would be enough to end Adolin's life. Unfortunately, he couldn't watch her every moment she was with Adolin. He had to show more initiative than that. Could he instead confirm that she was who she said she was? Decide from her past if she was a threat or not? Kaladin stood up, planning to jump down onto the ground to keep an eye on her as she approached Adolin. She suddenly started, eyes widening. She pointed at Wit with her free hand.
"You!"
Shallan exclaimed.
"Yes, yes. People certainly are good at identifying me today. Perhaps I need to wear..."
Wit cut off as Shallan lunged at him. Kaladin dropped to the ground, reaching for his side knife, then hesitated as Shallan grabbed Wit in an embrace, her head against his chest, her eyes squeezed shut. Kaladin took his hand off his knife, raising an eyebrow at Wit, who looked completely flabbergasted. He stood with his arms at his sides, as if he didn't know what to do with them.
"I always wanted to say thank you," Shallan whispered. "I never had a chance."
Adolin cleared his throat. Finally, Shallan released Wit and looked at the prince.
"You hugged Wit," Adolin said.
"Is that his name?"
Shallan asked.
"One of them,"
Wit said, apparently still unsettled.
"There are too many to count, really. Granted, most of them are related to one form of curse or another."
"You hugged Wit,"
Adolin said. Shallan blushed.
"Was that improper?"
"It's not about propriety," Adolin said. "It's about common sense. Hugging him is like hugging a white spine or a pile of nails or something. I mean, it's Wit. You're not supposed to like him."
"We need to talk,"
Shallan said, looking up at Wit.
"I don't remember everything we talked about, but some of it..."
"I'll try to squeeze it into my schedule," Wit said. "I'm fairly busy, though. I mean, insulting Adolin alone is going to take until sometime next week."
Adolin shook his head, waving away the footman and helping Shallan into the carriage himself. After he did so, he leaned in to Wit.
"Hands off." "She's far too young for me, child," Wit said.
"That's right," Adolin said with a nod. "Stick to women your own age." Wit grinned.
"Well, that might be a little harder. I think there's only one of those around these parts, and she and I never get along."
"You are so bizarre," Adolin said, climbing into the carriage. Kaladin sighed, then moved to follow them in.
"You intend to ride in there?" Wit asked, grin widening.
"Yeah," Kaladin said. He wanted to watch Shallan. She wasn't likely to try something in the open while riding in the carriage with Adolin, but Kaladin might learn something by watching her, and he couldn't be absolutely certain she wouldn't try to harm him.
"Try not to flirt with the girl," Wit whispered. "Young Adolin seems to be growing possessive."
"Or..."
"What am I saying? Flirt with the girl, Kaladin. It might make the prince's eyes bulge."
Kaladin snorted. "She's light-eyed."
"So?" Wit asked. "You people are too fixated on that."
"No offense," Kaladin whispered, "but I'd sooner flirt with a chasm fiend." He left Wit to drive the carriage, hauling himself into it. Inside, Adolin looked toward the heavens.
"You're kidding."
"It's my job," Kaladin said, seating himself next to Adolin.
"Surely I'm safe in here," Adolin said through gritted teeth, "with my betrothed."
"Well, maybe I just want a comfortable seat then," Kaladin said, nodding to Shallan Devar. She ignored him, smiling at Adolin as the carriage started rolling.
"Where are we going today?"
"Well, you said something about a dinner," Adolin said. "I know of a new wine house in the outer market, and it actually serves food."
"You always know the best places," Shallan said, her smile widening.
"Could you be any more obvious with your flattery, woman?" Kaladin thought. Adolin smiled back.
"I just listen."
"Now if you only paid more attention to what wines were good."
"I don't because it's easy," he grinned. "They're all good."
She giggled. Storm's light eyes were annoying, particularly when they fawned over one another. Their conversation continued, and Kaladin found it blatantly obvious how badly this woman wanted a relationship with Adolin. Well, that wasn't surprising. Light eyes were always looking for chances to get ahead. Would have stabbed one another in the back if they were in that mood instead. His job wasn't to figure out if this woman was an opportunist. Every light eyes was an opportunist. He just had to find out if she was an opportunistic fortune hunter or an opportunistic assassin. They continued talking, and Shallan circled the conversation back toward the day's activity.
"Now, I'm not saying I mind another wine house," Shallan said, "but I do wonder if those are becoming a tad too obvious a choice."
"I know," Adolin replied, "but there's storming little to do out here otherwise. No concerts, no art shows, no sculpture contests."
"Is that really what you people spend your time on?" Kaladin wondered.
"Almighty save you if you don't have sculpture contests to watch."
"There's a menagerie," Shallan said, eager. "In the outer market."
"A menagerie?" Adolin said. "Isn't that a little... low?"
"Oh, come on. We could look at all of the animals, and you could tell me which ones you've bravely slaughtered while hunting. It'll be very diverting."
She hesitated, and Kaladin thought he saw something in her eyes. A flash of something deeper. Pain? Worry?
"And I could use some distraction," Shallan added more softly.
"I actually despise hunting," Adolin said, as if he hadn't noticed. "No real contest to it." He looked to Shallan, who pasted on a smile and nodded eagerly.
"Well, something different could be a pleasant change.
All right, I'll tell Wit to take us there instead. Hopefully he'll do it instead of driving us into a chasm to laugh at our screams of horror." Adolin turned to open the small sliding shutter up to the driver's perch and gave the order. Kaladin watched Shallan, who sat back, a self-satisfied smile on her face. She had an ulterior motive for going to the menagerie. What was it? Adolin turned back around and asked after her day. Kaladin listened with half an ear, studying Shallan, trying to pick out any knives hidden on her person. She blushed at something Adolin said, then laughed. Kaladin didn't really like Adolin, but at least the prince was honest. He had his father's earnest temperament, and had always been straight with Kaladin. Dismissive and spoiled, but straight. This woman was different. Her movements were calculated.
The way she laughed, the way she chose her words. She would giggle and blush, but her eyes were always discerning, always watching. She exemplified what made him sick about light-eyed culture. "You're just in an irritable mood," part of him acknowledged. It happened sometimes, more often when the sky was cloudy. But did they have to act nauseatingly cheery? He kept an eye on Shallan as the ride continued and eventually decided he was being too suspicious of her. She wasn't an immediate threat to Adolin. He found his mind drifting back toward the night in the chasms, riding the winds, lights churning inside of him. Freedom. No, not just freedom. Purpose. "You have a purpose," Kaladin thought, dragging his mind back to the present. Guard Adolin. This was an ideal job for a soldier, one others dreamed of. Great pay, his own squad to command, an important task, a dependable commander. It was perfect. But those winds. "Oh," Shallan said, reaching for her satchel and digging into it. "I brought that account for you, Adolin." She hesitated, glancing at Kaladin. "You can trust him," Adolin said, somewhat grudgingly. "He's saved my life twice, and Father lets him guard us at even the most important meetings." She took out several sheets of paper with notes on them in scribble-like women's script. 18 years ago, High Prince Yennev was a force in Alethkar, one of the most powerful high princes who opposed King Gavilar's unification campaign. Yennev wasn't defeated in battle. He was killed in a duel. By Sadeas. Adolin nodded, leaning forward, eager. "Here is Brightness Iole's own account of events," Shallan said. "Bringing down Yennev was an act of inspired simplicity. My husband spoke with Gavilar regarding the right of challenge and the king's boon, ancient traditions that many of the Light Eyes knew, but ignored in modern circumstances. As traditions that shared a relationship to the historical crown, invoking them echoed our right of rule. The occasion was a gala of might and renown, and my husband first entered into a duel with another man." "A what of might and renown?" Kaladin asked. Both looked at him, as if surprised to hear him speak. "Keep forgetting I'm here, do you?" Kaladin thought. "You prefer to ignore dark eyes." "A gala of might and renown," Adolin said. "It's fancy speak for a tournament. They were common back then. Ways for the high princes who happened to be at peace with one another to show off." "We need a way for Adolin to duel, or at least discredit Sadeas," Shallan explained. "While thinking about it, I remembered a reference to the Yennev duel in Yasna's biography of the old king." "All right," Kaladin said, frowning. "The purpose," Shallan continued, holding up her finger as she read further from the account, "of this preliminary duel was to conspicuously awe and impress the high princes. Though we had plotted this earlier, the first man to be defeated did not know of his role in our ploy. Sadeas defeated him with calculated spectacle. He paused the fighting at several points and raised the stakes, first with money, then with lands. In the end, the victory was dramatic. With the crowd so engaged, King Gavilar stood and offered Sadeas a boon for having pleased him, after the ancient tradition. Sadeas's reply was simple. I will have no boon other than Yennev's cowardly heart on the end of my sword, your majesty. You're kidding, Adolin said. Blowhard Sadeas said it like that? The event, along with his words, is recorded in several major histories, Shallan said. Sadeas then dueled Yennev, killed the man, and made an opening for an ally, Aladar, to take control of that princedom instead. Adolin nodded thoughtfully. It could work, Shallan. I can try the same thing. Make a spectacle of my fight with Relis and the other person he brings, wow the crowd, earn a boon from the king and demand a right of challenge to Sadeas himself. It has a certain charm to it, Shallan agreed, taking a maneuver that Sadeas himself employed, then using it against him. He'd never agree, Kaladin said. Sadeas won't let himself be trapped like that. Perhaps, Adolin said, But I think you underestimate the position he'd be in if we do this correctly. The rite of challenge is an ancient tradition. Some say the heralds instituted it. A light-eyed warrior who has proven himself before the Almighty and the King, turning and demanding justice from one who wronged him.
He'll agree, Shallan said. He'll have to. But can you be spectacular, Adolin?
The crowd expects me to cheat, Adolin said. They won't come thinking much of my recent duels. That should work in my favor. If I can give them a real show, they'll be thrilled. Besides, defeating 2 men at once? That alone should give us the attention we need.
Kaladin looked from one to the other. They were taking this very seriously.
You really think this could work? Kaladin said, growing thoughtful.
Yes, Shallan said. Though, by this tradition, Sadeus could appoint a champion to fight on his behalf, so Adolin might not get to duel him personally. He'd still win Sadeus's shards, though.
It wouldn't be quite as satisfying, Adolin said, but it would be acceptable. Beating his champion in a duel would cut Sadeus off at the knees. He'd lose immense credibility.
But it wouldn't really mean anything, Kaladin said. Right?
The other two looked at him.
It's just a duel, Kaladin said. A game.
This would be different, Adolin said.
I don't see why.
Sure, you might win his shards, but his title and authority would be the same.
It's about perception, Shallan said. Sadeus has formed a coalition against the king. That implies he is stronger than the king. Losing to the king's champion would deflate that.
But it's all just games, Kaladin said.
Yes, Adolin said. Kaladin hadn't expected him to agree.
But it's a game that Sadeus is playing. They are rules he's accepted.
Kaladin sat back, letting it sink in.
This tradition might be an answer, he thought. The solution I've been looking for.
Sadeus used to be such a strong ally, Adolin said, sounding regretful. I'd forgotten things like his defeat of Yennev.
So what changed? Kaladin asked.
Gavilar died, Adolin said softly. The old king was what kept Father and Sadeus pointed in the same direction. He leaned forward, looking at Shallan's sheets of notes, though he obviously couldn't read them.
We have to make this happen, Shallan. We have to yank this noose around that eel's throat. This is brilliant. Thank you.
She blushed, then packed away the notes in an envelope and handed it to him.
Give this to your aunt. It details what I've found. She and your father will know better if this is a good idea or not.
Adolin accepted the envelope and took her hand in his as he did so. The two shared a moment, melting over one another.
Yes, Kaladin was increasingly convinced that the woman wasn't going to be of immediate danger to Adolin. If she was some kind of a con woman, she wasn't after Adolin's life. Just his dignity.
Too late, Kaladin thought, watching Adolin sit back with a stupid grin on his face. That's dead and burned already. The carriage soon reached the outer market, where they passed several groups of men on patrol in Colin Blue, bridgemen from the various bridges other than Bridge 4. Being guardsmen here was one of the ways Kaladin was training them. Kaladin climbed out of the carriage first, noting the lines of storm wagons set up in rows nearby. Ropes on posts blocked off the area, ostensibly to keep people from sneaking in, though the men with cudgels lounging beside some of the posts probably did a better job of that.
"Thanks for the ride, Wit," Kaladin said, turning. "I'm sorry again about that flute you..."
Wit was gone from the top of the carriage. Another man sat there instead, a younger fellow in brown trousers and a white shirt, a cap on his head. He pulled that off, looking embarrassed.
"I'm sorry, sir," the man said.
He had an accent Kaladin didn't recognize.
"He paid me well, he did. Said exactly where I was to stand so we could swap places."
"What's this?"
Adolin said, climbing from the carriage and looking up.
"Oh, Wit does this, bridge boy."
"This?"
"Likes to vanish mysteriously," Adolin said.
"It weren't so mysterious, sir,"
the lad said, turning and pointing.
"It was just back there a short ways, where the carriage stopped for turning. I was to wait for him, and take over driving this here coach. I had to hop on without jostling things. He ran off giggling like a child, he did."
"He just likes to surprise people," Adeline said, helping Shallan from the carriage. "Ignore him."
The new carriage driver hunched down as if embarrassed. Kaladin didn't recognize him. He wasn't one of Adeline's regular servants. "I'll have to ride up there on the way back. Keep an eye on the man."
Shallan and Adeline walked off toward the menagerie.
Kaladin retrieved his spear from the back of the carriage, then jogged to catch up, eventually falling in a few steps behind them. He listened to them both laughing and wanted to punch them in the face.
"Wow," Syl's voice said. "You're supposed to harness the storms, Kaladin, not carry them around behind your eyes."
He glanced at her as she flew over and danced around him in the air, a ribbon of light. He set his spear on his shoulder and kept walking.
"What's wrong?"
she asked, settling down in the air in front of him. Whichever way he turned his head, she automatically glided that way, as if seated on an invisible shelf, girlish dress fluttering to mist just below her knees.
"Nothing's wrong," Kaladin said softly. "I'm just tired of listening to those two."
Syl looked over her shoulder at the pair just ahead. Adeline paid their way in, thumbing back toward Kaladin, paying for him as well. A pompous-looking Azish man in an odd patterned hat and long coat, with an intricate design, waved them forward, pointing to the different rows of cages and indicating which animals were where.
"Shallan and Adeline seem happy," Syl said. "What's wrong with that?"
"Nothing," Kaladin said. "So long as I don't have to listen to it."
Syl wrinkled her nose.
"It's not them. It's you. You're being sour. I can practically taste it."
"Taste?" Kaladin asked.
"You don't eat, Syl. I doubt you have a sense of taste."
"It's a metaphor, and I can imagine it. And you taste sour. And stop arguing because I'm right."
She zipped off to dangle near Shallan and Adeline as they inspected the first cage.
"Blasted Spren," Kaladin thought, walking up beside Shallan and Adeline. "Arguing with her is like, well, arguing with the wind, I guess."
This storm wagon looked a lot like the slaver cage he'd ridden in on his way to the Shattered Plains, though the animal within looked to have been treated far better than the slaves had. It sat on a rock, and the cage had been covered over with creme on the inside as if to imitate a cave. The creature itself was little more than a lump of flesh with two bulbous eyes and four long tentacles.
"Ooh,"
Shallan said, eyes wide. She looked like she'd been given a pile of jewelry, only instead it was a slimy lump of something that Kaladin would have expected to find stuck to the bottom of his boot.
"That," Adeline said, "is the ugliest thing I've ever seen. It's like the stuff in the middle of a hasper, only without the shell."
"It's a serpentine," Shallan said.
"Poor thing," Adeline said. "Did its mother give it that name?"
Shallan swatted him on the shoulder.
"It's a family."
"So the mother was behind it."
"A family of animals, idiot. They have more of them in the west, where the storms aren't as strong. I've only seen a few of them. We've got little ones in Yakaved, but nothing like this. I don't even know what species this is."
She hesitated, then stuck her fingers through the bars and grabbed one of the tentacle arms. The thing pulled away immediately, inflating to look bigger, raising two of its arms behind its head in a threatening way. Adeline yelped and pulled Shallan back.
"He said not to touch any of them," Adeline said. "What if it's poisonous?"
Shallan ignored him, digging a notebook from her satchel.
"Warm to the touch," she mumbled to herself. "Truly warm-blooded. Fascinating. I need a sketch of it."
She squinted at a little plaque on the cage.
"Well, that's useless."
"What does it say?" Adeline asked.
"Devil Rock captured in Maribethia. The locals claim it is the reborn vengeful spirit of a child who was murdered. Not even a mention of its species. What kind of scholarship is this?
It's a menagerie, Shallan, Adolin said, chuckling. Brought all this distance to entertain soldiers and camp followers.
Indeed, the menagerie was popular. As Shallan sketched, Kaladin kept busy watching those who passed by, making certain they kept their distance. He saw everything from washmaids and tenors to officers and even some higher light-eyes. Behind them, a light-eyed woman was paraded past in her palanquin, barely even glancing at the cages. It provided quite a contrast to Shallan's eager drawing and Adolin's good-natured jibes. Kaladin wasn't giving those two enough credit. They might ignore him, but they weren't actively mean to him. They were happy and pleasant. Why did that annoy him so? Eventually, Shallan and Adolin moved on to the next cage, which contained sky eels and a large tub of water for them to dip in. They didn't look as comfortable as the Devil Rock. There wasn't much room to move in the cage, and they didn't often take to the air. Not very interesting. Next was a cage with a creature that looked like a small chul, but with larger claws. Shallan wanted a sketch of this one, too, so Kaladin found himself lounging beside the cage, watching people pass and listening to Adolin try to crack jokes to amuse his betrothed. He wasn't very good at it, but Shallan laughed anyway.
"Poor thing,"
Syl said, landing on the floor of the cage, looking at its crab occupant.
"What kind of life is this?"
"A safe one," Kaladin shrugged. "At least it has no need to worry about predators. Always kept fed. I doubt a chul thing could ask for more than that."
"Oh?"
Syl asked.
"And you'd be all right if that were you?"
"Of course not. I'm not a chul thing. I'm a soldier." They moved on, passing cage after cage of animals. Some Shallan wanted to draw, others she concluded didn't need an immediate sketch. The one she found the most fascinating was also the strangest, a kind of colorful chicken, with red, blue, and green feathers. She dug out colored pencils to do that sketch. Apparently she'd missed a chance at sketching one of these a long time ago. Kaladin had to admit the thing was pretty. How did it survive, though? It had a shell at the very front of its face, but the rest of it wasn't squishy, so it couldn't hide in the cracks like the Devil Rock. What did this chicken do when a storm came? Syl landed on Kaladin's shoulder.
"I'm a soldier," Kaladin repeated, speaking very softly. "That's what you were," Syl said.
"It's what I want to be again."
"Are you sure?"
"Mostly." He folded his arms, spear leaning against his shoulder. "The only thing is, it's crazy, Syl. Insane. My time as a bridgeman was the worst in my life. We suffered death, oppression, indignity. Yet I don't think I've ever felt so alive as I did in those final weeks." Next to the work he'd done with Bridge 4, being a simple soldier, even a highly respected one, like Captain of the High Prince's Guard, just felt mundane, ordinary. But soaring on the winds, that had been anything but ordinary.
"You're almost ready, aren't you?" Syl whispered.
He nodded slowly. "Yeah. Yeah, I think I am." The next cage in line had a large crowd around it, and even a few fierce-spren wiggling out of the ground. Kaladin pushed in, though he didn't have to clear a space. The people made room for Dalinar's heir as soon as they realized who he was. Adolin walked past them without a second glance, obviously accustomed to such deference. This cage was different from the others. The bars were closer together, the wood reinforced. The animal inside didn't seem to deserve the special treatment. The sorry beast lay in front of some rocks, eyes closed. The square face showed sharpened mandibles, like teeth, only somehow more vicious, and a pair of long, tooth-like tusks that pointed down from the upper jaw. The stark spikes running from the head along the sinuous back, along with powerful legs, were clues as to what this beast was.
"White spine,"
Shallan breathed, stepping closer to the cage. Kaladin had never seen one.
He remembered a young man lying dead on the operating table, blood everywhere. He remembered fear, frustration, and then misery. I expected, Kaladin said, trying to sort through it all, the thing to be more. They don't do well in captivity, Shallan said. This one probably would have gone dormant in crystal long ago if it had been allowed. They must keep dousing it to wash away the shell.
Don't feel sorry for the thing, Adolin said. I've seen what they can do to a man.
Yeah, Kaladin said softly. Shallan got out her drawing things, though as she started, people began to move away from the cage. At first, Kaladin thought it was something about the beast itself, but the animal continued to just lie there, eyes closed, occasionally snorting out of its nose holes. No, people were congregating at the other side of the menagerie. Kaladin caught Adolin's attention, then pointed. I'm going to check that out, the gesture implied. Adolin nodded and rested his hand on his sword. I'll be on watch, that said. Kaladin jogged off, spear on his shoulder, to investigate. Unfortunately, he soon recognized a familiar face above the crowd. Amaram was a tall man. Dalinar stood at his side, guarded by several of Kaladin's men, who were keeping the gawking crowd back a safe distance.
"Heard my son was here,"
Dalinar was saying to the well-dressed owner of the menagerie.
"You needn't pay, High Prince,"
the menagerie owner said, speaking with a lofty accent similar to Sigzil's.
"Your presence is a grand blessing from the heralds upon my humble collection, and your distinguished guest."
Amaram. He wore a strange cloak, bright yellow gold with a black glyph on the back. Oath? Kaladin didn't recognize the shape. It looked familiar, though. The double eye, he realized. Symbol of...
Is it true?
The menagerie owner asked, inspecting Amaram.
The rumors around camp are most intriguing.
Dalinar sighed audibly.
We were going to announce this at the feast tonight, but as Amaram insists on wearing the cloak, I suppose it needs to be stated. Under the king's direction, I have commanded the refounding of the Knights Radiant. Let it be spoken of in the camps. The ancient oaths are spoken again, and Bright Lord Amaram was, at my request, the first to speak them. The Knights Radiant have been re-established, and he stands at their head.